Welcome to episode 26 of the Mommy Beta Podcast. We are four new mommies beta testing parenthood, and this is the podcast where we talk about the things that we blog about on mommybeta.com, which we hope is a website that you are very regular to because we blog our hearts out over there. With me today is Natalie and Alex, and I am also Natalie. Hi, gals.
Hello.
You'll be happy to know I have no personal crisis, no natural disaster getting in the way of my parenting or blogging or podcasting skills today. So I feel a little bit too normal, actually. Too normal. What about you guys? Any hurricanes, anything like that?
No earthquakes over here in California.
Well, that's good.
It is cold.
There was an earthquake, though. Wasn't there? There was an earthquake.
Today?
In California, in the last week.
Yeah, I'm sure there have been. There have been little ones. My husband, Josh, hasn't really experienced a big earthquake, so I'm prepping him for that. We talk about, you know, where we would meet and what do I do with the baby, and we have our earthquake pack all ready to go, just in case. I was here for the 89 earthquake. It was scary.
Yeah, if you're not married to a Californian, you have to give them very specific instructions, because the earthquake that was on the East Coast this summer, Clayton was just like, oh, no big deal, let's go to the pool. I'm like, no, we all have to stay together. Aftershocks are important, but they don't know. They don't think it's anything worth. He's just like, all right, what are we having for dinner? You know, so if you're not a native Californian, you wouldn't know those things. So
it's true. And I was talking to my husband. I'm like, okay, well, he said, what do you do with the baby? For example, what if there's an earthquake in the middle of the night? I said, well, it depends on how big it is. If it's just a little shake, I'm not going to go grab her. But if I feel the need to protect myself, then that's when you get up and get the baby.
Right.
If you feel like you need to, you know, what do you do now? It's not hide under a table. I think we're just going to kind of the door frame.
I think that common knowledge go ahead, Nan.
I was going to say, actually, I think the suggestion is more hide under a steady, strong piece of furniture than a door frame.
Okay, see, we have a glass table, so we would have to do the door frame. But
you do what you can.
Yeah, or even your countertop might be good, Alex. You have that strong counter. And my mom sent me this emergency preparedness email that talked about how right next to those things are usually pretty safe as well. Like if you go right next to a sturdy piece of furniture, because your house comes down and creates a triangle around those things, and so there'll be a little bit of space right next to that thing that you can climb out of. But I don't
can you actually can you forward that to me?
I went to a disaster preparedness thing put on by my county, and they said that email is a bunch of hooey.
Oh really? No. It sounded a little like forwardy to me, so I was like, I don't know what I think about this, but okay, well then
They said under the steady piece of furniture is the place to go, or you know, just kind of wherever you can be away from falling objects, because they say the most damage that's done during an earthquake is from things falling on you, like picture frames or vases, or you know, it's mostly small cuts and bruises and things like that. So that anything you can do to get away from those kind of things is what you're supposed to do.
Oh,
hey Natalie, you feel Natalie Gaffori, there, you sound a little bit distant.
Do I?
Well, I can hear you okay.
Okay. Maybe just my speaker went out or something.
I'll adjust my mic a little bit.
Oh, there you go.
All right. Hopefully everyone else can hear us okay. We're recording on my computer and it sounds okay for all three of you sound okay on mine. So hopefully our audience hears that as well. Sorry about that little inside baseball. Also, you know, you have to make sure not to put your cribs near windows. If you're not a native Californian, you wouldn't think of that.
That's a good one.
But you never put your crib near a window, because that's going to go straight down into the baby, the glass.
And also be careful what you hang above the crib.
Yes. Yeah. Nothing glass. Yep.
We actually
above your own bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. These two huge canvases. And my father-in-law spent 4 hours hanging them. I mean, triple hanging them, making sure that if one, you know, if the nail failed, there was a hook. And if the hook failed, there's a wire. So she's protected.
That's great. That's so cute.
Sorry, I'm so nuts about earthquakes.
Yeah. Well, you know, you kind of have to be. I'm nuts now about any kind of disaster. I feel like I'm just going to randomly be killed by a tree at any given time. But
well, you've been through it all.
I know. I really have. I'm just waiting for monsoon to add to my resume.
No.
Oh, gosh.
All right. Well, we haven't blogged about that, although we did around some natural disaster. Oh, the Japanese earthquake.
You shared. Yep, we shared an earthquake.
We talked about disaster preparedness, so look for that on mommybeta.com. Go back in the archives. But Alex, you blogged about baby number two and what you would do differently. Where did this come from?
Yeah. So I have a friend who's 5 weeks. In 5 weeks, she will have her little one. She's having a little girl. And she asked me what questions I had before having the baby. And there were so many and just things that I had learned. So I shared a few blogs with her. But then it got me thinking, you know, about what I would do differently if I could do it all over again. Not all over again, but the next time that I have a baby. And again, I'm not pregnant, but I'm... You know, that'll happen sooner rather than later. And so it got me thinking, and I think one of the first things I would do is accept help right away. Because, you know, I have three sets of parents, you know, my mom, Josh's mom and stepdad, and then dad and stepmom, who all wanted to help and be here when the baby was born. And I said, absolutely not. They can be there at the hospital and then no one's coming over to the house except my mom for a couple of days. Well, it turns out I had lots of complications, and we ended up having a parent with us for the first 6 weeks, and it was just a tremendous help. They helped with the house duties and cooking, and it was just nice. And again, that's going to be different for everybody. Some really don't get along with their parents, and you know, it might not be so hard for others. So, you know, that was just something I'm going to do, is just take the help, especially with two. I can barely handle Reese right now. She's crazy. And the second one is sleep training. You know, Reese was colicky, so sleep training was a little challenging. Or her sleep was challenging. She just didn't sleep, which is why I felt the need to sleep train. But given her, you know, her track record now of sleeping, she's just such a good sleeper. And she's a happier baby. She wakes up happy. When she wakes up from a nap, she's happy. And so I've seen how important that was. And before this, I didn't realize how important sleep was and how much sleep babies needed. Right. So that was
Alex,
new.
Do you think that you would hire the sleep trainer again, or would you go it alone?
I would do it alone. You know, I have pretty good notes. And I think the difference is confidence. Part of what a sleep trainer does, I think, is train the parents to be confident in what they're doing. And Natalie Gafoy, I'll never forget what you told me. You said that letting a baby cry is not going to hurt them, but sleep deprivation will. And that's exactly what Reese had, because she would cry for 6 hours straight without sleeping. I mean, it was hard. So once we got her pass in, she was actually able to sleep. I didn't let her cry. That's not how we sleep trained her. The most we let her cry, I think, was 45 minutes. And then we'd go check on her.
I find it interesting that you use the term colicky, because I remember you blogging when you were going through this, and you were always really hesitant to use that word, because I think that you felt that Reese was kind of on the verge of colic, but not completely colic. And I know that that's one of those things that it's not really definitively defined.
Right. The way they defined it is if a child cries for 3 hours in a day, consecutive 3 hours for 3 days in a week for more than 3 weeks. And then with that definition, she absolutely was colicky. And you're absolutely right. I didn't like to use that word. She was my little princess.
I didn't like that.
Yeah, it was a lot of crying.
That is
both
a lot of
us.
Crying.
I mean, I remember Josh would leave and she'd start crying. And she would go for 4 hours, average a day, crying straight without napping.
Oh. I'm like it tearing up right now thinking of you dealing with that. Like, I can't even imagine.
Well, yeah. Natalie, you called me early on, and I was just a wreck. I was like, oh, my gosh, how is this happening? You know, and there's no – I don't know the reason. We tried everything. We thought maybe she had stomach issues. Maybe she was hungry. There was sleep. But at about 4 months, once we got her – because she would only sleep in my arms except for a night. She would sleep in her crib. And once we worked with her and helped her to fall asleep on her own, she was sleeping 12 hours a night and sleeping. She was just a happy baby. It was changed. And I'm not saying that – I don't think we could have – I don't think you can sleep train a baby under, you know, 3 or 4 months. That's – for me personally, that's too young.
Right. I think Dr. Weisbluth – or Weis – the – Natalie, what's his
Weisenbluth?
Name? Weisenbluth says 8 weeks.
I think it's, yeah.
He says 8 weeks before you can do anything like that. So you're just at her mercy. And I think recalling your blogs from back then, I remember you said that at one point you cried into your own mom's arms and said, she hates me. And that's what broke my heart so much. Because of course she doesn't hate you, but you must have felt like that.
Yes. And so the other thing that, you know, and looking back, I was reading some of those blogs because I wanted to share them with my girlfriend. I don't know, you know, people ask, well, did you have postpartum depression the whole time, the first 4 months? And I don't know. You know, I thought it was a really bad case of baby blues. So one thing I'm going to do differently is just be aware that, you know, between the difference between baby blues and where you're going to cry and, you know, it's a transition. But if you're crying every day for several hours and then all of a sudden have feelings like, oh no, I can't do this. Really? I can't do this. And I don't want to be here. You know, that's a big flag.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Josh will be able to kind of keep an eye out more too this time. Cause he's been there and he's seen it and he knows kind of what to expect and what's normal and what's not.
Whereas the rest of us, when we just kind of got hit from it by the left and we knew it was coming, but then, you know, all of a sudden we're crying over something so silly. And then later on we're laughing about it because we're like, that's silly. Like, I remember Jennifer's post about how she saw, I think she just emailed us privately. She said she saw Elle's picture on Tom's phone just a few days after and started to cry. So it just hits you out of the blue where you're like, I'm fine. And then you pick up the phone and you're like, what?
No, mine wasn't like that. I'd wake up, be like, oh, she's so cute. And then the crying would start and I would hold her and I would cry with her. I was like, okay, this isn't getting better. And then the last thing I think I would change, I don't know about how you, I would love to hear what you guys think about this, or just your own experience, but the breastfeeding. I placed so much pressure on wanting to breastfeed for a certain amount of time. You know, I wanted to get to the year mark. And then I actually started my period after 4 months of having Reese, which is really early.
Yeah.
And that made my milk really disappear for 3 days. So I was a wreck. I'm like, oh my God, she's going to starve. She wouldn't take formula. I had to try 3 different formulas. And finally on day 3, she took it. And I was pumping every hour and a half just to try to get my milk back. And for 3 days, it was just gone. So I'm not going to place so much pressure. I think things happen for, you know, naturally. And at 6 months, I remember, okay, she had started solids, my milk was disappearing again. Oh, it came back, needless to say. And I didn't know if I should start trying. I took this stuff called fenugreek. Natalie, before you actually recommended that to me, and it worked great. Oh, no, that's okay.
I loved that stuff.
I realized I didn't want to go through that process because it was just a lot. I was waking up in the middle of the night to pump just to make sure I had enough milk for her. So I'm going to just kind of go with the flow this time. And if my milk starts to go away, I'm not going to stress so much. I'll do what I can, but I'm not going to kill myself and just worry as much as I did because that wasn't fun. That took part of the fun of breastfeeding out. For me.
And stress actually does contribute to you losing your milk. Your milk won't come in unless you're relaxed. Like, there's so much that goes into it. So if you think about all of these things cumulative, a colicky baby, a depressed mommy, a stressed out about breastfeeding, you know, then there's no wonder that, you know, when you say, looking back on my first 3 or 4 months, it was really hard. There's no wonder that you feel this way. That's a lot to deal with. That's like my trees coming all around. That's many, many trees falling down around you.
Right. I was actually looking back at the post and it was kind of an out of body experience because I remember, I mean, it seems so like so long ago and I just can't believe I felt that way. It's really strange.
The way our minds work is crazy surrounding pregnancy and childbirth and having a little baby because it's absolutely true. They say that you forget and you block it out because you know, I don't remember it all being so bad, you know, like maybe that's my body just being like, oh yeah, you want to have another baby, forget, you know, those sleepless nights and all of that. But I really think that it's kind of amazing what our minds and our bodies do to keep the human race going. You know, they trick us into thinking it's not so bad.
Yeah, that's true. And you were talking about what our minds do to us as we procreate. And since I am in the process of procreating again, I'm in week 13 and holding on strong. I figured we could talk about what my mind is doing because I blogged about my prego dreams that I've been having lately. And man, pregnancy dreams are gnarly. Do you guys remember yours?
Yes. I don't remember that.
Really? You didn't have dreams that you like ate the baby or anything like that?
The one dream I remember was that I had that the baby that I had looked like a tiny Italian Cartman from South Park. That's the only dream that I remember.
That is so funny. Because I had dreams that, like, that they had slipped me open and I looked at the baby and then closed me back up just so I could take a look at him. I had weird dreams like that. And since I don't find out gender of my babies, I didn't for the first and I won't for this one, I dreamed gender and I was right. I knew I was having a boy and I was right. And I think this time I've been dreaming boy and I think it's another boy. That's just sort of how I feel. We should place bets on it. But the other night I was, of course, dreaming about my falling trees. And then it just in the middle of the night, I turned to Clayton because he had gotten up to go to the bathroom and he got back in bed and I said to him, trees. And he goes, what? And I said, trees. And he goes, okay, honey. And then I go, and also Steve Jobs. And he goes, all right, then. And went back to sleep. And I said, is this pregnancy dreams? It has nothing to do with the baby, or is it just me being crazy? So I started to recall all the dreams that I had. I also, when I had my genetic testing in my first pregnancy, I dreamed that the baby did have Down syndrome, but I think that was a direct result of, you know, waiting for the results and how scary that can be. And I just passed my genetic testing this week. And you know, it's scary because they don't say your baby doesn't have these things. They say your probability is 1 in 1,500 or 1 in 10,000 or something like that. They said, we can never tell you zero, but we catch 90% of all cases, 10% still slip through. And I'm like, but I want you to tell me zero. Tell me when the baby doesn't have it. And they just can't. And it's so scary. But at the same time, I realize I really believe in the power of, like, what you put out in the universe is what you get back. And so if I continue to think about, like, oh, you know, will it have this? And should I continue to worry about this thing? And then there was one test that was inconclusive from my blood work. And they said, well, maybe we should test your husband for this. And I was like, no, because, you know, we already had my husband tested the first baby, so we know, you know, our probability. And I just thought, I'm going to make myself crazy about this if I don't just let it go. I know I believe in my ability to have a healthy baby now, and I've just got to, you know, focus on that.
Good for you, Nat.
So, I don't know. How do you guys feel about that? The genetic testing, it can make you so crazy.
I think the idea... Oh, go ahead, Natalie.
No, you...
Oh, I think the idea of the testing is good, but then I was, what do you do? I think it's more the outcome. What if the outcome is that there's going to be a big issue that you find out this baby, your baby that's been inside you for so many weeks is going to have Down syndrome? I think that's what's, you know, kind of scary.
Well, that's the big question, you know, and that's why they do that. I mean, one of the reasons why they do the genetic testing is that so you can make a decision. And some parents, you know, if it's at a certain stage in the pregnancy, choose not to continue the pregnancy. But then the other reason why they do it is so that you can be prepared and you can educate yourself. I think that's the important part about it is that, you know, if I were to have a baby that was going to have Down syndrome, I would absolutely want to know ahead of time so I could know what we're getting into and I could do as much research as possible and find the right doctors and do all of that kind of ahead of time. Because I think, you know, having that surprise when the baby is born would be devastating. You know, it kind of gives you some time to get adjusted to the idea and make preparations for it.
Mm-hmm. Right, but then you have to, while you're having these tests, you know, have this conversation with your husband or at least with yourself and say, well, if the results are a little bit more on the scary side, what am I going to do? And you have to ask yourself those questions and what am I prepared to do? And that's torture as well in and of itself because, and so many people do have to make those decisions. And they have to be, it has to be a decision you have to live with. So my mom, you know, when I was talking to her about this afterwards, I was like, well, you know, there's one thing that runs in Clayton's family that maybe we'll test him for. I don't know. Should we? And he was like, no, because it doesn't give you an indication about this baby. It gives you an indication about what he may or may not carry, which is not relevant because this baby already got good grades. So just, she's like, let it go. She goes, in my day, we just had a baby. You know,
yeah.
So there's a great quote from T.S. Eliot about where's the knowledge that we lose in all of this information. And that's sort of how I felt like it'd just be more information, but not more knowledge. It won't tell me what this baby has or doesn't. So I just said, OK, I'm going to stop this.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to turn it over to fate because, you know, what else can we do?
Yeah, exactly. So, and just, you know, you do the best you can. You eat well, you rest up, you drink water, and then you have faith in your ability to do this. And one of the conversations I had with Natalie when I first told you that I was pregnant was I said, it amazes me that my body knows what to do, even though I don't. Mm-hmm. And you said, yeah, that's true. And you were getting ready to deliver back then. You said, I even feel my hips getting wider, or, you know, like the baby dropping, the relaxin coming into my joints. And you said, my body just knows. And that's so amazing.
It is.
Yeah. So, and the same can be true, said, you know, Alex, for nursing. Like, your body knows how much milk your baby needs, and then your body also knows when it just can't keep up. It's going to call uncle. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Sorry, I just knocked.
And thank goodness we live in a time and a place where you have options. You know, we all have options if you know, one thing or another doesn't work out the way we expect. So, and lots of support.
Well, let's thank our show sponsor, Gazelle.com, because we want to tell everyone what a great website it is. Gazelle.com sponsors the Mommy Beta podcast, and we are grateful for that. They're a great website that allows you to sell your used consumer electronics without all the hassle. So if you go to Gazelle.com and you tell it what are the electronics that you have to sell, it will give you a value of those things depending on the condition of that item. Then it will help you send that to Gazelle. They will either ship you a box, help you print a shipping label, or help you in one way or another get it to them. And then when they get it, they will confirm that it is in the condition that you said it was in. And they'll give you money either over PayPal, a check, or as an Amazon credit. And if by chance you have something so obscure that they just can't do anything about it or use it or sell it in any other way, they will help you still take that item and recycle it in an eco-friendly way, because no one wants blackberries in the sea. So go to gazelle.com, sell your used consumer electronics before the holidays. Use that money for nice gifts, if that's what you plan to do, or something nice for yourself. And speaking of gifts, if you want to know what you can do with that stuff, go to mommybeta.com, because we have a gift guide about what mommies might want for Christmas, or specifically what these mommies want for Christmas.
Hint, hint, daddies. Yeah.
I put a few of mine up there. Although I had already told Clayton, I said, I just want jammies that I can be pregnant in that don't look like garbage bags. So, So anyway, go to gazelle.com, and if you feel so inclined, please tweet them at gazelle_com and tell them that you heard about us on the about them on the Mommy Beta podcast, because they need to know that our audience is loyal and learning about them. So thank you for so much, Gazelle. We love you for your support. All right, let's move on. Natalie, you wrote this cute little post about behaving like the baby's around even when the baby's not around, which was so funny. And tell me about the inspiration, because I like this blog that you linked out to as well.
Oh my gosh, this guy's hysterical. I think he's a stand-up comedian. His name is Jason Good, and he's doing kind of a blog project where he's writing a blog post every day. It's called Jason Good's 365 blog, and he's hysterical. Like, he has all of these different posts. Like, he has this whole diatribe on different foods. Like, he'll call out fruit and be like, raspberries, what are you doing? Why are you fuzzy? It's kind of strange, but it's pretty hysterical. But the series that I like the most that he does is he talks about funny things that he does as a parent that he would have never thought he would do, like pre-chewing someone else's gum, or my personal favorite is that he has to hide to eat cookies, which I totally have to do, because if you try to eat a cookie when the baby's around, the baby wants a cookie and the very many cookies. So he kind of inspired me to write a little post of, you know, things that I find myself doing that are a little out of the ordinary. And the main thing that I kept coming up with is things that I do when Nick is around that I still do when he's not. So one of the things I was just telling you gals when we hopped on the call is that, you know, Dominic left an hour ago, but, you know, when I went to go get my cup of coffee before we started, I stepped over three baby gates on the way to get there. So I forget that I can just pull them down when he leaves and that everything will still be safe. You know, I when I'm watching TV, I put the remote up high so he doesn't grab it. And the other thing that I find myself doing is whenever I see a squirrel, we have a lot of squirrels in our neighborhood, I get super excited. I might have even done this before Dominic was born. Maybe I just really like squirrels. But you know, it's they're fun to watch. You know, they dig into the grass and they bury their little nuts and they scamper along the fence. So do you girls find yourselves doing things that you do for the babies even when the babies aren't there?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I think the one big thing is and it's specifically when Reese is not around or if she's sleeping and Josh is around, I talk in the baby voice because I'm with her 24/7. It's like, hey, sweetie, do you want some cheese? Do you want a snack? So Josh comes home. I'm like, hey, babe, do you want some dinner? He's like, what? Why are you talking like that? We have to, you know, turn that off. And it's really hard.
That's funny. The baby get. I also do the words where I'll ask Clayton, do you want a bag of naggin? Because that's a banana in our house. And Clayton will text me, okay, Miles is down for sleep. He ate his bapples. apples. So we end up using his language more because we think it's funny. But I've been stepping over this baby gate, which is at the top of our stairs for a while. And I'm like, you know, as my balance shifts forward and I get more pregnant, I really have to not do that because it's going to be dangerous if I keep trying to do that. So especially because it's at the top of a really steep and slippery staircase.
You should get the baby gate that I have in the kitchen. It's amazing. You just step on it and you can open it. And this way, you're holding Miles.
Well, we have this molding down below. I tried to get that one, and it just didn't fit all that well. We haven't actually had very good luck with baby gates. I swear those things are designed by demons.
Or people who don't have kids.
Yeah, or people who – it must be. I always say I'm going to start a whole line of baby gear that charges over USB and baby gates that actually – that actually charge, because just today I put some batteries in a toy and I'm like, this is so annoying that I can't just plug this into the wall and charge it. I get so mad. So anyway, well, that was a really fun post, Natalie. I'm going to make sure I RSS feed this guy too, because he's hysterical. I like does the 365 is 5 degrees more than Anderson Cooper's perspective.
Do you remember I posted a blog by him? It was Inside the Mind of a 2-Year-Old.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I think that's how I discovered him.
That was one of my favorites. I actually still sometimes go back just to that one post because it's hilarious.
Yeah, that was so funny. It was, I need to push some buttons. Where's my mom? Yeah. That was hysterical. It's definitely my everyday experience. I'm sure it's yours too.
Yeah.
One other thing that he wrote about that was super funny was he was on tour, you know, had to be away from the kids for a couple of days, and he was talking about how much he missed them. And he said that, you know, what I wouldn't give to hold a kid up so he could turn the light switch off and on for a few minutes, which I thought was so cute, you know, like,
that's really
cute. You know, every morning at breakfast, Dominic goes, light, peas, because he wants to get up and on and off. And I can't resist him because he's saying, please, you know. But it's a little annoying to get away from my bowl of Honey Nut Cheerios and have to go do that. So it's nice to think about. You know, I'm lucky to be able to do that because I'm here with him every morning.
Yeah, that is cute. Well, there's so much more going on over at mommybeta.com. Hopefully you are going there. And because we're giving away some really great stuff. This week we're giving away a Kodak 3-in-1, all-in-one printer. And these things are sweet. They print directly from your iPad or your iPhone because they've got this great Wi-Fi capability. They can print in color. They can fax. They can copy. This is great for holiday projects if you're a DIY like my fellow Mommy Betas are. So make sure you enter. It's really easy. Just head on over to mommybeta.com. And then next week we're giving away some swaddles. We've got a lot of fun stuff given away this holiday season, so get on that. We always like to end our podcast with a little victory, so I thought that I would go ahead and take it this week because Miles is really, he's talking up a storm, and it's actually Clayton's little victory, but I'll share it anyway. He had his first real conversation with him the other day, which was really interesting. I mean, it's just mean it's, you know, a back and forth more than just one word or what is this kind of thing. He walked into the kitchen, and I said, well, you know, he finished his dinner. Do you mind giving him an oatmeal cookie? And he goes, okay. So Miles followed him in there, and he goes, do you want a cookie? He goes, yeah. And he handed him the cookie, and he goes, thank you. And he said, here you go. He goes, here you go, buddy. And Miles said, thank you. And I was like, that was a real interchange.
That's so great, Nat.
I know. Well, it's not, like I said, not so my little cute victory, but, you know.
Isn't the thank you the cutest thing ever?
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, it's so cute.
And off he goes with this little cookie. So cute, my little boy. And then today I was changing him and I said, oh, poo-poo. And he goes, poo-poo, poo-poo. And I was like, yay, poo-poo recognition. That's one step closer. He knows poo-poo.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So, I mean, they pick up things so fast. It just blows my mind.
It's amazing. We went to the Academy of Sciences the other day, and one of the scuba divers was in there cleaning the tank. And since then, all Dominic has been saying is scuba dada, which means scuba diver.
That's so cute. And Miles also learned ho, ho, ho. I took him into a store that had Christmas decorations up already. And I said, what does Santa say? Ho, ho, ho. And he says it all the time now. So then I tried to buy him a stuffed Santa, and I couldn't find any anywhere except in the $1 area at Target, because I don't know if Santa's out of style or is he just politically incorrect, but it was really hard to find a Santa. So I found one. And he just says over and over, ho, 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 ho.
That is so cute.
It's really cute. Yeah, he sounds like a little Brit. Ho, ho, ho.
When Dominic tries to say Santa, he says Satan.
Oh, no. Well, they both wear red. He's close. Oh, I could go on and on about our little words.
Oh, I know. It's so cute.
All right. Well, share your little victories or your little lexicon learning experiences with us. We love this kind of stuff. We can't get enough of babies. We love babies. You can always reach us at mb@mommybeta.com or just comment on the blog anywhere on Mommy Beta or on Facebook, facebook.com/mommybeta or on Twitter @mommybeta. So we've got all the social networks and all the communication portals covered. We'd love hearing from you. Thanks so much for listening to episode 26. We'll see you right back here next week on the Mommy Beta podcast.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Happy as can be, flying through the park on our bikes on a Sunday afternoon. You and me, rolling on the floor, practicing your somersaults, your cartwheels, your donkey kicks and more. How did you grow so big overnight? How did you get so smart and bright? Yesterday you were asleep in my arms, today you're growing off the charts. So proud of you. You and me drawing pictures wild and free while the paint goes flying. Your big smile, it brightens up the room. Head on my shoulder, your eyes on the pages ahead. How did you grow so big overnight? How did you get so smart and bright? Yesterday you were asleep in my arms, today you're growing off the charts. I'm so proud of you.